Fridays on luradio.ca and 9 p.m. Thursdays on cjlo.com.
What's going on? What are you doing? What's going on? Tanya Dunga's Gigon, then on Zewa Dahunsa Dache, Ungahuan, and Hadiwa Nodus, Nene Aboriginal Voices, Oscar Dewa Nyawar Oscar, Ne Jota FM, CFRC.
And thanks, Nathan, for giving us that big information. Yes, you are tuned to CFRC. It is 6 o'clock on this Tuesday evening, and we're glad to have everybody along. And look at that. We had rain for 2 days, and all of a sudden, it was gorgeous, and the sun's almost ready to set. Yes, it is fall. Isn't that amazing? We get to this point where the sun is setting 7 o'clock or just before 7 for the next few days, and then we'll be aiming for, you'll be complaining later, and then in December we'll change it when it sets around 4:30 in the evening, and then you say, oh, I want the sun back. So think about it. There's a lot of storytelling that goes with that in Aboriginal communities, and I think that it would be really appropriate for us to collect a few stories over the next few weeks. Often we wait until it snows, but I just tell you, Sean and I were taking some time, hiking and traveling and looking at the woods at the end of summer, the beginning of the fall. And last week I had 2 days in a row with 4 degrees at night, 4 degrees Celsius. Yeah, think about that. And the daytime temperatures were very nice, 20 degrees, 21 degrees, something like that. It's amazing how the weather changes and how your attitude is. And I notice people are moving a lot better these days. So maybe that has just got to do with the fall. Or is it, the scientist in me saying, is it the change of color that makes us feel better? No, I don't know. I am thankful that we had rain over the last couple of days because the trees up in my area, I'm north of the city of Kingston, and Sean's got trees all around him as well that seem to need a bit of water. Not as much need as in our area, but yeah, same thing. And it's amazing how just this bit of water has caused a few small shrubs to kind of perk up a little bit, so. We'll see what happens. Anyway, Aboriginal Voices tonight. Yes, I am solo and Sean's on assignment this week. And I can't wait to get, maybe he'll call in. Yeah, call in, Sean. The phone number, 613-533-2372. That's 613-533-CFRC. You never know. Maybe we'll be able to do that. The other thing too is we're getting some feedback, and thank you to those folks who were giving us your ideas about the historical tracks, and we'll see what happens with more ideas as they keep coming in. I'm wondering if as we go through all of the work today. That we're going to have a good combination of stories for everybody. One of the things, I'm going to mention it a couple of times today because it's more news than it is just stories and what's happening in the community. But it's very important to take a look at what's happening. We're coming up this week where you're going to see people with orange shirts and Every Child Matters. Well, September 30th is next Tuesday night. So we're going to do a special on Orange Shirt Day and the whole idea of why to think about it. But coming up, though, we have a group in Kingston who are coming with the title is called Taking on Bill 5. And Ontario's recently passed Bill 5 is an affront to Indigenous rights, natural law, and nature's protection. So think about that title. We're all going to have to kind of take some time to think about it, but the idea is you don't get up and you go out and fight for it, necessarily physically fight, but you get together with friends and you come up with what you have to offer to get people to think about it. So on Sunday, September 28th at 7 p.m., and the doors open at 6:30, and it's at the Spire, right here on 82 Sydenham Street, very close to Queen's campus. So if you're around, think about going to this event. And it's called Raising Our Voices, Taking on Bill 5. It's a community concert. So great idea. So they're going to have special guests. Sarah Harmer is going to be there, and Kekau, and then what it is, pay what you can. Suggested students pay $10, adults $25. The minimum is $10. But if the price is a barrier, then just come out. If there's space, we'll let you in. I don't know if you've been over to the Spire. It's a fairly big room. It's upstairs. I think there is an elevator to get there. So if you have mobility or accessibility issues, then I believe there is an elevator. But there's a nice set of wide stairs to go there. So that's Sunday night, September 28th at 7 p.m. Now, what we're going to have for you, and it'll be after these shows are on, there's folks in the group who've come all the way from Northern Ontario down to Ottawa and now to Kingston to help raise an awareness about the issue of Bill 5, why it is an affront to Indigenous rights, natural law, and nature's protection. So if you want to go and find out about it, there's a public lecture and a discussion, and it'll be on Monday, September the 29th at 6:30 p.m. at the Isabel Bader Center. That's at 390 King Street West. Yeah, so if you're from campus, you just walk west along King Street. And wow, that would be easy. Or if you're from campus, right by the Stouffer Library, walk down Union and then you turn south towards the lake. You'd have to get your GPS going for that one. But they're going to have Indigenous youth movement are going to be sharing ideas about the Bill 5 and the impact on Indigenous communities. So for all the people who are, well, let's see, if you're in medicine, then you definitely want to go to learn about the perspectives, because if you're going to be working in helping people who are from those areas, anywhere that are Indigenous territories or treaty territories, then you're going to need to know why this is a problem. If you're in political studies, it's a great opportunity to learn about different aspects of the challenges that we're seeing right now. This is a political situation, so policy studies fits in there. But, you know, there are other areas that may be of interest. You know, the kinesiology folks. You know, I know that there are a number of people working in kinesiology who have background with Indigenous communities. And so this Bill 5 aspect, and the Ontario Bill 5, interesting that they're not getting into Bill 5, the Ontario bill. They're getting into that one, but they're not getting into the Bill C-5, which is the federal government's bill. But that encompasses the whole country, whereas Bill 5 is just relates to Ontario. Anyway, that's you know what? That one I said on for Monday, September 29th at 6:30 at Isabel Bader. It's free, but you have to register in advance if you want to go to it. How do you get there? Well, tickets, reservations, and further information. Well, you go to, you all set for this? I would just type in Taking on Bill 5 Kingston and see what happens in your search engine. But https://naturesdefense.ca/2022 2025/09/03/taking-on-bill-5/. So that's naturesdefense.ca 2025/09/03, taking on Bill 5. And I think the date in there, September the 3rd, was the day that bill was passed. Interesting. They are all set. And I know the youth group, they're ready to share their ideas, and I'm ready to listen to them. And Aboriginal Voices team has a date set for Friday that we're going to do pre-record. So we're going to record what they want to say and what they want to pass on. And we'll be able to share that, not just on the 28th or 29th that you hear them, but also on the 30th and then throughout the year. Aboriginal Voices can take some of those and we'll play them again, give people time to think about it and also time to research it. So that's what we want. Coming up, I because we have all of this, we're, you know, I don't know. I was just saying to Sean yesterday that, you know, maybe we should use some of DJ Shub's music. The words are not here. This is just instrumental. And, you know, it's going to be kind of fun because DJ Shub has been working with folks trying to come up with ways of sharing information and ideas. Title of this song is called Back to the Land. And, you know, we've played other songs right here on the air that they have, like Calling All Dancers. Well, that's a good idea. But Fight for Your People is another title. We're not doing that tonight. Old School is for Lovers. That's a great one. But War Club, I was going to play that, but then I just said at the beginning, let's not do that one. But so we're going to do Back to the Land. And this is DJ Shub. Thank you.
Season. Meanwhile, the York Lions no longer just play for pride. They are actively on the hunt for their first playoff appearance in well over a decade. It's the Upstarts versus the Icons, David versus Goliath. It's the York Lions and the Queens Gales live on CFRC 101.9 FM. Tune in at 2:45 for the Grad Club pregame show ahead of the scheduled 3 p.m. kickoff.
On September 28th at 7 p.m., check out Raising Our Voices, Taking on Bill 5 with special guests Ramon Catacquapit and local musicians Kakao and Sarah Harmer at The Spire. All are welcome to also attend the Free Indigenous Perspectives on Bill 5 event at the Isabel Bader Center for the Performing Arts on Monday, September 29th at 6:30 p.m. as well. Learn more about Taking on Bill 5 initiatives at naturesdefense.ca.
The only CFRC 101.9 FM.
My name is Stephen Brooks. I'm an emergency doctor and researcher in the Faculty of Health Sciences at Queen's University. Out-of-hospital cardiac arrest affects about 35,000 people across Canada every year. The sooner treatment begins, the higher the probability of recovery. Neighbors Saving Neighbors is a pilot program to improve survival for people who experience sudden cardiac arrest in Frontenac County. Let us teach you how to do CPR, use an AED, and become a lifesaver. Consider becoming a Neighbors Saving Neighbors volunteer.
Apply today at frontenacparamedics.ca.
Now, there's a great community effort going on there. So if you're involved in that, I applaud you. And if you're not, check it out. You know, you never know when you may need some help like that. Or you could be a person who would be a neighbor who could help neighbors. Check them out. Sean and I were talking over the last little while, a number of years, I guess, about going to hike on trails, you know, and different trails you could go to. And last week, I had some fun with friends, and we went out, and we went to a place called Lake of Bays Heritage Foundation. And they have a site called Marshes Falls Nature Reserve. Now, Marshes Falls, so some of the people were thinking, oh, we're going to a marsh. Well, there are going to be bugs and everything. Well, there were a few bugs, not many. But it turns out it's a nature reserve, and Marshes Falls is the actual name for the falls. And many years ago, in the early 18 to mid-1800s, there was a lumber mill there, and the waterfalls provided the Marsh family with an income where the Marsh family ran the mill. And so that's why it's called Marshes Falls. And it's a nature reserve because the Lake of Bays Heritage Foundation is a nonprofit land trust. They acquired the property to protect its natural and scenic values. I can tell you it is scenic. Doesn't matter what season. I've been to it in all seasons now, and it is absolutely scenic. It's a beautiful place. Not one of those great big falls like you want to go to Niagara Falls and see it, but, you know, it's still there. It's on Highway 35 or just adjacent to Highway 35 near Dwight, Ontario. So it's where Highway 35 ends at Highway 60. It's almost at that point. Anyway, if you wanted to go to it or any of the nature reserves around the province, check them out. This one gave us the tagline, take only photos, leave only footprints. And I would say, take only memories, leave only footprints. But they've got this idea of take photos. What's permitted use? And I thought, okay, I mean, these things just, they have to do something to tell people what they don't want, but what they're telling you first. Permitted uses includes hiking, bird watching, cross-country skiing, snowshoeing, photography. What is not included for what is prohibited use on the nature reserve? Camping, fires, hunting, biking, motorized vehicles, pets on the property. Partly the problem with pets is that they interfere with the wildlife in some ways. Anyway, take only photos, leave only footprints, and you can have fun with that. But they have an excellent map set up, and this is what I think all reserves should have if they want you to come and be safe and find your way around carefully without getting hurt. And Marshes Falls Trail Guide. So if you're going to go to a trail, you know, Sean mentioned that he went to a couple of trails. He's going to tell us about some today. I've mentioned about some of the other trails that I've been on. Definitely have a map so that it can help you orient where you are and where you're going and what you're looking for. But I know that at this site, the people had a great idea with how to do trail markings when you come to signposts and you change trails. So they got it all set up there. I know Rock Dunder is another one of those trails that has been changing over the years. Mind you, it's more expensive to go to Rock Dunder than it is to go to Marshes Falls. Marshes Falls is free, but you have to register. So that you send them who you are and when you're there, and I suspect it just gives them data to collect, to do a report on how many people are actually using it. But if they find a car after dark and they want to know who's there and what trails you were going on. Anyway, I took a lot of data when I was out there. I photographed, and the others in the group had the cell phones with the identification for birds in the area. Even though you can't see them right away, you can hear them. The bird ID that they were using, the Merlin, on the computer or on their cell phone, gave them a sighting. So we saw raven, and we heard the ravens, several ravens out and about in the woods. Nuthatch, chickadee, and two ducks. So that was what I saw. That's what's recorded on my page here. But I also recorded the distances that we went, and my photographs allow me to do the timing. So where, what part of the trail took how long, how many minutes, and so on. You know, just here's an example. We started out from where we parked the car right at Sale Road, and we walked towards the waterfall, and it took 11 minutes to come to the next signpost. And I looked back, I could see the car from the signpost, and I thought, it shouldn't take us 11 minutes to do this. But then I counted how many pictures we stopped to take, and looking at the different plants that are there. And so it's just sort of getting us introduced to what's there. So, then give them feedback. So I've got a couple of photos I'm going to send with some questions about the type of trees that they had planted, or were these just naturally coming along on the trails? So we'll see. Anyway, that was my trip. Part of my trip. We went to a whole lot of other places, but Marshes Falls, and it took us probably just over 3 hours to hike around all the trails. But if we were, and so this would be a recon for us, the adults. If we're going to take kids in the spring or fall, then we probably would go for one section of a trail, and then go see the falls, and then another section of trail, and go and see the falls at another date, two or three days later or a season later. Also, I like the term, take photos and only leave footprints. That's great to have as a thought, but the other part of this whole project is what else is out there that we could actually be studying and think about, so that the kids come along and they have an opportunity to add to the science collection of data that they have there, and maybe have it sort of compare in their own little, field notebooks. You go in the fall, you go in the winter, you go in the spring, you go in the summer. What are the differences? What stays the same? What would you like to go back and see? Those kinds of things. But there's all sorts of things. Some people are interested in rocks only. So you can still do that because there are different rock formations around there. Or somebody's just interested in trees, or someone else in fungi, and someone else may be interested in all of the flowers that grow at certain times of the year. Colors, maybe the color, the idea. And as I got going, I talked to a young person on the way in today here at the station, and mentioned, we were talking about that aspect of what we're going to talk about today. And she asked, well, did anybody pick up on the idea of collecting sounds? All right, that would be good too. And what kind of equipment am I going to need to collect sounds? Well, Merlin collects bird sounds, but it also captures other sounds around it. So if people are talking or, you know, the wind is blowing. Right. This time of the year, with the aspens all turning color and drying up, the leaves on aspen trees make a clanging noise. It's quick, spectacular. So there's another one to add to it. And the other one that came up was, what about the weather? How do you describe the weather? All the good things that you can have that you see around you, who knows? Anyway, just looking to see what's a good song to play, and it looks like Izque is up next with Nobody Knows.
Tomorrow, deliver you from sorrow, cradled in her vision. breezes, a smile like summer showers. Oh, sweet Alberta, I'm coming home.
I'm coming home.
To your Rocky Mountains, to your Blue Ridge skies. Oh, sweet Alberta, I'm coming round. To get my feet back on the ground.
Well, there, that one was Forest Eagle Speaker and Sweet Alberta, and before that is Quay with Nobody Knows. Two really great songs to fit into our conversation tonight. Remember I jokingly said, give me a call, give a shout out to me, and I'm just going to get set up here. I'm going to play another Forest Eagle Speaker song, one he called Wash Me Away. Yep, I guess talking about trails really caught Sean by interest. So, anyway, we're going to see if we can get him live on the air. But right after we hear from Forest Eagle Speaker, give me a technical moment, and we'll be here with Sean.
You're too up, too up. the water wash over me, let it wash over me. Let the water wash over me, let it wash over me. Let the water wash over me.
Tell me about Vanderwater.
We did Vanderwater last week.
But tell me a little bit about it.
How was it?
Yeah.
Oh, it was good. That's the one where you walk up a hill, and then you hit a plateau, I guess. And you walk a little while longer, and then you walk up. You have to go up a more hill.
Mm-hmm.
And then you go down, and then down some more, and come around.
So
it's a long walk.
And roughly how far? How many kilometers?
I think we did it in an hour and a half.
Mm.
And the guy says probably. He says it's 4 miles.
Oh, okay.
So I don't know if it's that far, but. That's what that guy said.
Mm-hmm. So what did you see? Trees, rocks, water, anything like that?
All of it.
Oh.
There's trees, rocks, and water.
Tell me about the trees.
Nothing.
Oh, come on. Any colors?
No, it was weird. There's no color there. It's all green.
Mm-hmm.
But on the way there, we went up the... it's Shannonville Road, and you drive up that way to Chisholm's,
mm-hmm.
almost Chisholm's, and then you come around this other road that's before Chisholm's, and you go around, and all on that road was all different colored trees.
Okay. So
that was the only place.
Your September hike had no color in it. Well, that's...
The actual hike,
yeah.
I would say there was nil to none color.
Mm, my goodness.
Of the trees. It was weird. But then on the road I live on, all kind of colors.
That's amazing. I was doing some hiking along the Ox Tongue River, Rapids, the Ox Tongue mm-hmm. River in the Muskoka area, just near Huntsville, up that way. And over the course of the week that I was there, the colors changed every day, a little bit more. And so by the time we hiked in different places, we had oak trees that were dropping leaves, and maple trees, and aspen trees. So, yeah,
uh-huh.
And they were all different colors. It was really lovely. But along the Ox Tongue Rapids, oh, it was so gorgeous with the light. As you come out of the woods to get close to the edge of the river was so low. There's very little water up there, so the river's so low that about half of the riverbed is dry. So the river itself, that's normally quite wide and fast-moving, was a little bit slower, but also very narrow. And so the little waterfalls that were there, where you could go right up to them in the spring and early summer, I don't want to go anywhere near the shore because it's so rapid. But no, it was really pretty, and we had a snack while we were out there and listened to the water, and it was so relaxing. Yeah, quite amazing. I have photos I'm going to share with you probably next week,
next week.
I have to edit them, in the sense of I have to kind of go through, select all the photos I took, so it would bore you looking at them, but certainly the ones that I'm going to really like.
Here's people you don't know.
Oh, I got 10 shots of, well, I don't think there are people in many of my photos. Not
no.
this time. No, no, there were. Nobody was on the trail we were on. Nobody. Just the four of us walking. Yeah, well marked, which is surprising, because the first time we found this trail, you kind of had to pick your way through to figure out where you're going. We knew mm-hmm. where to go because the river was there. We were going downriver, but then. So we walked in about 1.5 kilometers, and then we turned around after our snack, and we walked back taking pictures and collecting data as we went. We were, what kind of plants, any flowering plants, any kind of fungi, you know, we were kind of categorizing things. Everybody had a different task as we went.
Did they?
Yeah, so it was a lot of fun. Yeah, that was only one day of the 4-day hikes. So anyway, pretty neat.
Yeah.
All right. So we'll talk to you later.
Yeah. I don't know that we will, but maybe the one guy was the only other guy, he was talking about rock dunder.
Oh, yeah. You're going to do that? That would be great.
I don't know. Is it a long one?
No, not too long. I mean, 2 hours maybe. That's that's including standing up at the top and looking all over. You can see to the States from there.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
That sounds interesting. I think I will.
I've just got an announcement that it's supper time.
All right.
Okay.
So it's not hard?
No, not hard at all.
Is it pathway or are you going through rocks?
There's one spot where you climb rocks, but they picked a way to make it easy. So even I can do it now.
All right.
Okay. You know, like I'm getting better that I could go. I'd be willing to try and do it. So, all right. Good. Thanks for that. We're going to go to music.
Yep. All righty. Talk to you later.
Respect the gift. got, you gotta give it all you got.
Okay, so get this. We're going deep on Saskatchewan farmers.
Oh, Saskatchewan.
Yeah, but not for the usual reasons. Oh. You know, we got this news story of farmers dealing with some pretty unusual crop thieves.
Unusual? How so?
Elk are eating his crops.
Oh.
Elk calls. Yeah. And to get the whole picture.
Really?
Yeah, we're going to look at some data visualization, too. Oh, and get this. There are rogue bison roaming around, too.
Elk eating crops and rogue bison.
It's wild, right?
That's definitely caught my interest. What's the story?
So this farmer, Glenn Crittenden.
Glenn Crittenden.
Yeah, his farm's near Hudson Bay, Saskatchewan. And he had a rough year. It was so wet, he couldn't harvest a lot of his crops.
I see.
And then, as if that wasn't bad enough, winter starts coming in and huge herds of elk show up and start munching on his unharvested crops.
Wow, that's rough. Talk about adding insult to injury. It's not every day you hear about elk creating this kind of havoc on farms. Why is this happening?
Well, it seems like the elk population of that area has just exploded. Yeah, that's led to these massive herds that need to find food. And you can imagine 50 hungry elk trampling through a field. It's not good for business, especially when those crops are supposed to be your income.
Right. That makes total sense. He mentioned crop insurance, though. Wouldn't that cover the loss?
Well, that's where things get tricky.
Oh.
He says it's almost impossible to put an exact dollar figure on the damage wildlife causes.
Oh, I see.
Imagine you're Glenn. How do you even tell the insurance company how much 50 elk ate? You know, did they go for the highest yield plants? Did they trample more than they ate?
Right.
There's a whole science to assessing this kind of damage, and it's not easy.
That's a great point. It's one thing to assess damage from a storm or a drought, but yeah, unpredictable wildlife.
Totally.
Adds a whole other level of complexity.
And that's where the rogue bison come in.
Okay.
There's this herd of 100 bison running around in the same area.
Wow.
You'd think they'd be the bigger problem, right?
100 rogue bison.
Yeah, that sounds like a real headache.
So why does the farmer consider the elk a bigger issue?
That's what I was wondering. The news story didn't really say, but it makes you think about the differences between elk and bison behavior. You know, maybe elk are more focused when they're eating.
Uh-huh.
Or their movements are harder to predict.
It's a good question. Now, you might be thinking, is this just an isolated thing? Or is there a bigger trend here?
Right.
Well, let's look at this data visualization that maps elk populations across Canada.
Okay.
What do you notice about Saskatchewan?
Well, the first thing I see is Saskatchewan has a pretty dense elk population. And some of those hotspots are right near agricultural areas.
Exactly. This map uses data from satellite tracking and wildlife surveys. It shows us that elk populations in Saskatchewan have been rising steadily for the past decade. And yeah, you're right. Those high-density areas, they often overlap with prime farmland. So this backs up what Glenn's seeing. It's not just a random event. There's a bigger pattern here.
So this raises a lot of questions.
Yeah.
What does this growing elk population mean for farmers in the long term? What about the overall ecosystem?
It's definitely a complex issue. We have farmers like Glenn trying to protect their livelihoods.
Yeah.
And then we have a thriving elk population.
Right.
Which is great for biodiversity.
So how do we find that balance between those competing interests? What are some solutions?
Well, there are a few things to think about. Wildlife management is key. Controlling herd sizes.
Right.
Or using things like wildlife corridors to steer elk away from farms.
Wildlife corridors. What are those?
Basically, they're pathways designed to connect natural habitats. Think of them as protected routes that let animals move between areas safely.
Okay.
This can help guide them away from farms and places where people live.
That's interesting. So it's like giving them their own highway system to keep them out of trouble and off the farmlands.
Exactly. There are other options too. Different ways farmers can protect their crops. And we could always look at the elk population as a resource. Through regulated hunting or ecotourism.
You know, while those management strategies are important, we also have to remember that elk are a natural part of the ecosystem.
Absolutely.
And their grazing can actually be beneficial in some ways.
Definitely. Elk grazing can help control certain plant species, and how they move around can create a mix of habitats that benefits other wildlife.
This has been a really eye-opening deep dive. You know, we learned about the unexpected impact of growing elk populations on farms, the challenges farmers like Glenn are facing, and the data that helps us understand these trends.
It really shows how events that seem isolated, like a farmer dealing with elk, can actually be connected to larger ecological patterns.
For sure. And it leaves us with a question. Are there similar wildlife agriculture conflicts happening in other regions? This deep dive really makes you wonder.
Yeah, it does.
That's all the time we have for today's deep dive. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
And we'll see you next time.
See you later.
Bye.
Bye.
Could my hand watch me bleed? Jump through a photograph, make believe. You said I'm sorry when I needed it most. Show up in my dreams just like a ghost. Just a wild child searching for someone to hold, but you took my trust, cast me aside, never felt so small. Dark and barely there. Dreams turn vivid, new nightmares. Oh, your poison running through my veins. Love is blind and love is pain.